cooking the hot pot. Cooking on your that that. Cooking the crock pot pot. We came from nothing to something. I don't trust nobody, grip the trigger. Nobody call up the gang and they come and get gang. Cry me a river, give you a bad and bougie. Bad cooking up the oozy. My savage, ruthless. We got 30s and 100 rounds too. It's bad and bougie. Bad cooking up the oozy. My savage, ruthless. We got 30s and 100 rounds too.
What? Yeah. She back to the bone. Hey, wait. Did watching? I swear to God, they be my clones. Yeah, hey. Huh? Switching my hoes like my flows. What? Switching my flows like my clothes. What? Keep on shooting that gun, no reload. Ooh. What? Now she want my crew. Cause the money come all out the roof. Try to Rari that on the roof. Wait, what kind Rari? 458. All of they hate. Try to hide you through the gate. Look, go to strip club, make it rain. Yeah, so much money they use rakes. Count 100,000 in your face. Yeah, then put 300 right in a safe. Met her today. Yeah, she talked to me like she knew me. Yeah, go to sleep in a jacuzzi. Yeah, waking up right to a two piece. Yeah, counting that paper like loose leaf. Yeah, getting that chicken with blue cheese. Yeah, boy, you so fat like my collar. You snake, and I swear to God that be that Gucci. And you know we winning. Yeah, we is not losing. Try play your song, it ain't move me. So your girl wants that she choosing. Yeah.
Brand right. Drop, drop top, drop top. Smoking, no cooking, the hot box. Cooking. Yeah. Cooking up dope in the crock pot. We came from nothing to something. I don't trust nobody, grip the trigger. Nobody. Call up the gang and they come and get gang. Cry me a river, give you a two. It's bad and bougie. Bad. Cooking up the ooze. My savage, ruthless. We got 30s and 100 rounds too. My is bad and bougie. Bad. Cooking up. My nigga savage, ruthless. We got 30s and 100 rounds too.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of
Whistler?
Boy, do we have great news for you. Escape the city in one of Zipcar's many mountain-ready vehicles. Plus, get $30 back in free driving credit when you tweet a selfie on the slopes at Zipcar BC. Zipcar. Wheels when you want them.
My mama told me when I was young, we're all born superstars.
Hey folks, the Pride Collective at UBC is an AMS resource group for LGBTQ plus folks. All our events and resources are free, so you should check us out on Facebook or come to Nest 2103 and say hi. We have so many fun events every week.
Thank you.
Hello, good afternoon. You are listening to All Access Pass on 101.9 CITR FM. My name is Desi Nair, and I'm the Access Collective Coordinator. I am joined in studio today by my fellow co-host. You guys want to say hi?
Hi.
Hello.
And our guest for the day, Bill.
Well, hello there.
It's a bit of a packed studio today. It's also a little warm, so we're getting quite cozy here. For those of you that are listening for the first time, we are a CITR's collectively run show that talks about accessibility for those with diverse cognitive and physical abilities, both on campus and beyond. And we're always looking for new people to join our collective, so if you're interested or want to suggest a topic, go ahead and email us at our email. It is accessibilitycollective@citr.ca. Be careful with the spelling there. There is three I's in the word accessibility. As always, it is important to acknowledge we are broadcasting live from the AMS Student Nest on the traditional, ancestral, occupied, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people. So this week, we are continuing our piece on guide and service dogs. Before that, however, we wanted to talk about the Women's March that happened this Saturday, and the exciting way that disabled activists have taken part. So I'm just going to go ahead with that, and Miriam is going to help me with that.
Hello, I'm Miriam.
So, as you know, the now president, we have in the States, there is a new president. I don't think much has to be said about him. Now, his relation to the disabled community has not exactly been a pleasant one. Most notably, this began when he mocked reporter Serge Kovalevsky for his speech impediment. He is a well-known reporter that lives with a disability, and Trump immediately received backlash online from the social community.
And rightly so. In the spirit of democracy and their First Amendment rights, the disabled community continues to resist the policies and sentiments of Donald Trump. As mentioned earlier, this last Saturday was the Women's March. Contrary to what the name may suggest, the Women's March, according to the organizers, was more about equality than women's rights itself. And that was a critical base that resonated with the disabled community. As a result, they were successful in advocating for official and explicit presence in many aspects of the Women's March. Due to many of the mental, physical, and other abilities that inhibited people from attending in person, persons with disability activists virtually made sure their voices were heard through social media sites like Facebook and Twitter, and articles submitted to sites like Huffington Post, DisabilityMarch.com, and others.
So one great thing about the march that the disability march that Miriam brought up is that it was very much centered and led by the disabled community. In fact, the founder of the disability march platform, her name is Sonia Hubbard. She has a chronic illness. She helped organize the disability march platform, which organized chronic illness and disability related issues and content related to the women's march and their virtual attendance. Now, they've processed alone 1,500 submissions. That was just on the day of the march, this Saturday, January 21st. This doesn't include the thousands and thousands of submissions that weren't able to be processed because it was just too many for the Disability March staff, that online website, to process, which is pretty great. They're also, something really important to note is that they are a recognized official co-sponsors of the Women's March movement. I thought this was really important here. In an article posted just yesterday by the Huffington Post, Alina Schultz, who is a writer and freelance editor, as well as a mental health and disability rights activist, she wrote about the agency she felt through being a part of the Interactive March. I have her quote here. So she says, "I knew early on that protesting in person wouldn't be an option for me. Between having multiple chronic illnesses and an anxiety disorder worsened by crowds and tight spaces, I had to respect my limitations when it came to such a huge and packed event. As much as I support and care about this cause, I want to be there in person. I needed to do what's best for my physical and mental health. Thankfully, because of the Disability March, I was still able to participate in this momentous occasion." End quote.
That's not to say that many disabled activists didn't attend the march in person. Many actually made the trip. The Women's March website for them included a portion for disability under their frequently asked question FAQ section to facilitate disability attendance. This basically means that they had an area where it was most appropriate, for example, for someone who was in a wheelchair to enter the march and at what time they could leave. There was advice on bathrooms along the way that they could use, which is huge. In fact, an estimated 45,000 people with disabilities were said to be in attendance in attendance in Washington, D.C. alone. This number is significant, and it's huge considering that the largest disability march to ever happen before this included just over 8,000 people, which is phenomenal. Unfortunately, an exact number of the attendance wasn't confirmed, but their presence could be seen in articles, pictures, and news coverage of the event post-march.
Yeah, me and Bill, we were just talking about that before. The number 45,000 seems like quite a bit. So yeah. We're hoping there were 45,000, but we're not too sure about that.
If not, they were there and present and heard, and that's more
that's
important
super
than a number,
important, for sure. So what's so significant about the participation of disabled activists in the Women's March is Trump's promise to repeal the Affordable Care Act, also known as the Obamacare. This could have severe implications for those that live with a disability within the states. And this impact could be more grave than expected, considering that the disabled community, my statistics here say that nearly one in five Americans identify as being a part of the disabled community. Many people on the website discuss their fear of the Affordable Care Act being repealed. This means a lot of medical benefits and financial support received through this act may no longer be a reality.
A very specific post we found about this was from on the Disability March website, was from the parents of a 3-year-old boy named Walter. They were describing their experience, saying, "My son is joining the Disability March to represent the children of the U.S. who will be adversely affected by Republican plans to repeal Obamacare and put access to a free and appropriate public education in jeopardy. My son has a rare and complex medical condition and has already surpassed the lifetime benefit cap that was in place for our insurance policy before ACA became law." They continued by explaining, "If Obamacare is repealed without a replacement, my son risks becoming uninsured and uninsurable due to exceeding the lifetime cap. At this point, we truly don't know what we would do." End quote. This was voiced by disabled activists and their allies during the march. "Trump's negligence to the needs of those marginalized goes against the well-being of USA and the whole world, essentially."
So we're going to end this news piece here today with the mission statement from the Disability March website that sums up their purpose quite eloquently. They say, "We stand together recognizing that defending the most marginalized among us is defending all of us." End quote. And with that, we're going to pass it off to Deepi, who is going to open our topic for the week.
This new story I am sharing with you all may be about 3 years old, but it really ties perfectly to our topic on service dogs, guide dogs, and also was featured on the Today Show as well as many other media outlets. On December 2013, Cecile Williams, who happens to be legally blind, had fainted while waiting for a train in the upper Manhattan, New York area. He stumbled off the city subway platform and into the tracks below. And Orlando, Williams' black Labrador guide dog, jumped down to the tracks and huddled on top of his owner as the train went on going above them. Cecile credited Orlando for saving his life because although both were stuck, they had only minor injuries. Williams acknowledged the incident and said, quote, "Orlando was like my angel, and he's always been that since I got him. We work together. I protect him and he protects me," end quote. But at that time, age 11, Orlando was ready to retire from the service, and Williams's insurance would only pay for an active working dog. However, after receiving media attention to this incredible story, anonymous donors pitched in to allow Orlando to stay on with his master, Cecile Williams, who also got a new guide dog as well. A Godiva, a yellow Labrador, who graduated from her training program at the time from, at the time, from Guiding Eyes for the Blind in New York, would work as full-timer in her role model, Orlando. Williams said he was moved to tears by the generous spirit of donors who allowed him to keep both dogs. He expressed by saying, quote, "The spirit of goodwill, it exists," end quote. He further stated, quote, "In the world you see a lot of negative things, but I try to focus on the positive," end quote. Williams said he felt incredibly lucky to have both Orlando and Godiva to protect him from harm, and said the following, quote, "I feel that I was blessed with Orlando, right? And now I'm being blessed again. He saved me, and now she's coming along to carry on where he's left off," end quote. So that's the end of the story, but I'm sharing this amazing story with you, the listeners, because there are some good deeds out in this world that we live in. This story is a prime example of a guide dog saving his owner's life and didn't care how dangerous it was for its own life. That shows a unique bond between a human being and an animal. Then, there's a big community in New York City who are known as strangers, but coming together to donate money to a human and his pet in need, to be together and beyond. How beautiful is that?
Awesome. Thank you, DP. So with that, guys, stick around. We're going to head into a little break. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking more with Bill. And as we head into this break, this next song is by Banks. This song is called Warm Water, and it's off her 2014 album, Goddess.
Looking you over, you don't know my name yet. By the time you looked away, already knew I couldn't fake it. I got this need for you, forming in my beating heart. Yesterday were worlds apart. Come over.
CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. It's also, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys,
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Okay, guys, welcome back to All Access Pass. I'm joined in studio today by our guest, Bill Conway. Am I pronouncing that right? And just a little bit about him. He's a longtime advocate for accessibility, especially for the visually impaired. He's the provincial director of the Canadian Council of the Blind, the BC and Yukon division, and he was involved with much of the, I didn't know this until we were talking just now, he was a founder of much of the beginning legislation in BC. Yeah. Is there any information I missed with that? Just a little further.
That's fine. No, you haven't missed much. I do chair an accessibility advisory committee for my local community on the Sunshine Coast.
Nice.
Seashell.
Nice. So you're centered out of Sunshine Coast.
Yes, I am.
Awesome. So I guess jumping right into it here, do you want to...
Can you explain to us the training process side of things? How long did it take you and the chief to get used to one another?
Thank you, DP.
Yeah.
First of all, my dog, my left-hand man, he's known as the chief. He's a very small, 26-inch, 68-pound German Shepherd. He's full of vim and vigor. The training of these dogs start when they're 8 weeks old. Mm-hmm. They go into a 4-H home for a full year where they're trained and given the basic household skills, like do their business outside and not inside, eat out of their dish, not off the kitchen table, and items of that nature. They are socialized in the general public to go on buses into businesses. The chief, for example, was at many Pittsburgh Pirates games, the Pittsburgh Penguins hockey games, and their Pittsburgh Steelers football game he was at. One of my dogs in the previous actually went to the opera. That dog enjoyed the opera. I don't, but that's not me. After a year, the dog comes back to the school. My school is the CNI Incorporated in Morristown, New Jersey, where that's the original school that started the program, or the guide dogs program movement in the United States in 1929. Actually, on January 29th, just a few days from today, the CNI will turn 88 years young. So when they get back to the school, they're given 3 to 6 months of constant training, learning from A to B and B back to A, from stopping at curves. And it's a long process, like say 3 to 6 months. And then I go down in the fourth or the seventh month, for example, and I'm trained for 19 days. And then I fly home with my dog. And it's the first time the dog's been on a plane. So...
Yeah, we forgot to mention joined with us in studio is also the chief. He is under the recording table right now, being very patient with us. I'll continue. So another thing we wanted to ask, I guess, is when did you decide to get a guide dog?
About 1970s, mid-70s, when I was really noticing that my sight was being lost and never be found again. And I met a gentleman at that time from the CNIB who had a beautiful-looking German Shepherd, and we talked to him. Then I applied to the school in 77. In 79, I went for my dog. And when I came back for the dogs, when I started working on behalf of making these dogs eligible to go into various businesses to make them accepted and not to be turned away.
Right. And that was your first guide dog. Have you,
what have you, have you seen a lot of changes in the training of guide dogs since you've got your first guide dog?
Okay, over 40 years of using the dog, yeah, a lot of changes have come about from the method that you're trained on, and then also on how you, the person, are able to train the dog to do extra things for you at home, like i.e. by clicker training, which is you take the dog to a door, for example, say, good boy, door handle, because you want to go to a door. They get that, I'll say the word treat, but not too loud. And then eventually you keep the dog doing that there, and every time he gets to that door, he gets a tidbit. And then eventually you can do it without the tidbit, and it'll go straight to the door. But I use it a lot for looking for APS system, accessible pedestrian signals on corners.
Right.
He will go straight to the button, and he will sit by the post until he gets his tidbit. And so that's how I do the extra training. So there is a training of that nature too. And of course, different schools have different commands. So, and all schools train their dogs basically the same, but with different variations on the commands.
Right, right. DP, did you want to continue?
Okay. What kind of duties are a part of the chief's job description?
Wow. His job description is to take me from A to B in a very safe manner. And along the way, he says, give me some F-double-O-D and I'll even do it better. His job description is to be alert, calm, cool, and collective. Mm-hmm. This dog will accept challenges. As I told Desi here, is my very first time on UBC campus ever. I've never been to the bus stop here in my life, and I'm 65 years young. And in my 40 years of being in Vancouver, I've never been here. So it was a new experience for me, new experience for the dog. And we do go to new places. Yes, it is a new experience. I have to be calm, cool, and collective at the same time and try to figure out where I want to go and on how to tell the dog where to go. If I want to go right, I tell him right. Or if I want to go left, I tell him left. Or straight and straight is straight.
Right.
Straight, we hope.
You were saying, we were mentioning before, you said that a lot of it, like in terms of where the dog goes and the direction of the dog, it's very much on the owner.
Yes, it's on, the owner has to know where he or she is going.
Right.
Because you can't tell the dog, you get up in the morning, okay, chief, take me to work.
Yeah.
Well, we're still in the house, you know. But when I go outside, and he's working, I was in my community, I'll say, we're going to the mall.
Right.
Or going to the library. I say, off to the library we go.
So there are places that he does
he
know.
He recognizes the word library. He recognizes the mayor's office. He recognizes coffee shop. He recognizes the magical word called pet store. And it is very difficult to walk and buy a pet store without trying to get in there. For example, they opened up a new doggy wash store in my mall in Seashell. I had no idea where it was, but I knew it was there someplace. Well, we found it straight in. Of course, they got squeaky toys and they got treats all over the place. I've told him there's no canine shoplifting. And he's done the canine shoplifting.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, it picked up a whole big, huge bone and went, hi, yeah, smiling throughout the store. And tries to walk out with it.
Oh, no. I think we're going to head into break now. We'll be back with Bill Conway after the break. But with this, we're going to leave you guys off with a song. This is Years and Years singing Real. Enjoy.
Into you, how much do you want it to? What are you prepared to? touch you, but it starts to hurt. What have I been doing wrong? Tell me what it is you want. Tell me what it is you want. Tell me what it is you. Oh, I think that if I had. Just my type. What's a boy to do? Oh, I think I'm into you. How much do you want it to? What are you prepared to do? Think I'm gonna make it worse. I talk to you, but it don't work. I touch you, but it starts to hurt. What have I been doing wrong? Tell me what it is you want. Tell me what it is you want. Tell me what it is you. Oh, I think that if I had been enough for you, would I be better? Would I be good? And I don't you like if you'll stay the night. You tell me you don't think you should. You do it, boy. Well, love, I'll let you go. Love, I'll let you go. Love, I'll let you go. Love, I'll let you go.
That free magazine from CITR has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities.
They are doing this by developing gender-affirming, client-centered models of service.
Ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available.
and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support.
Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for the trans members of our community.
Hello, you are back with All Access Pass. I'm joined in studio today by my co-host DP, Miriam, and our guest Bill. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
And our Chief, who's under the table. So, jumping back in here. So we actually met at the Accessibility Legislation Consultation. Big words there. What are your thoughts on the upcoming accessibility legislation?
I think Minister Colicultural is doing a very reasonably good job in generating conversations throughout our country, coast to coast and border to border, on the appropriate framework to bring about a good, solid Disability Act for Canadians. There is a lot of work on it. I've just recently seen a definition, a political definition of disability, and it's going to take me three more readings to try and understand the political ease words that are in there, because it doesn't come right out and say that a person with a disability is either has physical or has sensory or neurological disorders. It has other terms in there. I'm sorry I didn't bring it with me, or I should have.
No worries.
But it is one heck of a document that she's put out. It's on change.org,
right.
Petition line, if you're looking for it. But I think that the legislation will be strong enough so that
right.
hopefully all people with disabilities will be inclusive
right.
throughout our country.
Well, that was another thing we were looking into before last semester was, if I'm not mistaken, it's the first Canadian accessibility legislation. We actually don't have one.
Correct.
This is new. And it's I think it's kind of, you know, it's about time we had one for sure. And I'm super excited. The person who's in charge is doing a very good job.
Yeah. Last week, the new Guide Dog and Service Dog Certification Act came into place in BC. What are your thoughts on this new piece of legislation? And has this have an effect on you in any capacity?
The legislation called BC Guide Dog Animal Act, Bill 17, was introduced to the general population of Province of British Columbia on January 16th, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Minister Susan Anton, the Attorney General, introduced it at that time. To me, my opinion is that the new Guide Dog Service Dog Act for this province is based upon a business model, not based upon a user-friendly model. No matter what, we still have to, and we still are, we still are being denied access to different places.
Right.
And we still have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that our dogs are certified, our dogs are well-trained, and our dog is a CNI dog or a guide dog. When it comes to service dogs, most people are trying to say every pet, every Pomeranian, every Rottweiler is a service dog. And unfortunately, they're not.
Right.
They should be. These animals should be certified through appropriate certified schools. There's only two in Canada. One's operated out of Oakville, Ontario, at Canine Vision Canada, Lions Foundation. And the other one is for medically alert dogs and other forms of service dogs is from Pacific Assistant Dog Society, located here in Burnaby. So there is a variety of schools out there, but they're the only two in Canada that does service dogs officially. There is an autism dog school out of the BC Guide Dog, an autism dog school out of Ladner, but that just trains guide dogs and autism dogs. The school I go to in CNI in New Jersey, they only train CNI dogs. So it just depends on where you want. But a service dog, most of them are being, unfortunately, are fake.
Right. We were, that was one thing we covered was the last week when, because that was when we began our discussion on seeing, service dogs and guide dogs, was that there needed to be clearer legislation to differentiate between a service dog, an emotional support dog, and a guide dog, because they're not all allowed the same legal rights, exactly. What would you suggest in terms of like making sure that that's differentiated, that people know that these are guide dogs and they're very much different from service dogs?
The international identification of a CNI dog or a guide dog is the harness.
Right.
The harness handle. When it comes to service dogs, I believe it can be very simply done by providing them a colored vest that represents their disability, i.e., I think purple may represent one disability, orange may represent the deaf organization, yellow may represent another organization. Color-coded, you may say. But that way, they have a jacket on, indicating that I'm an emotionally service dog or PTSD dog.
Right.
For our veterans.
Right.
For our veterans. Our vets are being put aside.
Right.
And their dogs, a PTSD dog for them, is very, very beneficial.
Right.
There's only three schools in Canada that trains two schools in Canada, one in Ontario, and one's being formed out here on the island to train PTSD dogs for our veterans.
Right. And so there was another thing was that, so there's no actual widespread identification system for...
No, the only thing we have right now, we're told that we can apply to the BC government and once again carry around another piece, a pictured ID, saying that we have a certified guide dog or certified service dog from the province of BC.
So that's just a personal question, right? Is it an actual picture of the dog, like on an ID piece? Oh, interesting.
It's an ideal picture of the dog and me, for example, the chief and I, on a laminated picture ID. And when asked, we have to show that and prove that our dogs are certified by showing this ID, and we can carry it in our pocket. But normally, I've never asked for ID for my dog. I've only been asked in the 40 years, me using the dog, I might have been asked 3 or 4 times.
So in that sense, it's not a very useful system then?
No, it's not. Right. Because we get ID from the schools, and on the ID, on our picture, student ID, picture card ID, it says certified. Whether I'm certified crazy is another story. But my dog does come, and it's the picture of the dog and myself, indicating that it is comes from a certified school and the dog is certified, and we as a team are certified to work together.
Right. I think you were also mentioning before when we were chatting that that this kind of identification system, it has to also be careful in that it can't actually, when asked to identify, it can actually disrupt the dog working.
Correct. Usually happens when we walk into a business in a restaurant, waitress or manager says, sorry, you can't bring that dog in here, and we automatically stop. And my first question is, why? And they say, because no dog's allowed. And as I'm sorry, this is a CNI dog or a guide dog, and we're allowed everywhere. If we were asked at that time, I can reach into my pocket and pull out my dog's ID.
Right. But has that ever had to...
3 or 4 times in 40 years.
Okay.
The only time it should, and the other times that is normally asked for, is when I cross the border,
right,
back into Canada or into the United States with my dog.
Right, and they ask for legal certification
of
your dog.
Yep. And all you have to show is your ID.
Right, and not the guide dog ID.
That's the guide dog ID.
Oh, you have to show the guide dog ID.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Because it shows on there, it's written on the ID that the dogs are certified.
Right.
And it's a picture of that dog and you.
Perfect.
Not of another dog in you.
Yes. And I think when we first met, you were talking about how it is to travel with a guide dog. Do you want to speak a bit on that?
What I mentioned at the Federal Accessibility Consultation Session and asked the minister to put into the framework of the structure of the Disability Act is that when we go through customs coming in or across our border, that our dogs are not asked to have their uniform removed, meaning their uniform being the harness, leash, and or collar. Because once they are removed, you got a loose dog.
Exactly.
And you can run. It loves to run through an airport. And these dogs, once they're scanned, the scanner, of course, you know, when across your clothes, across metal, it barks back at you or beeps back at you. Thus, it could startle the dog.
Right.
Custom officers or inspectors can only view the dog. They cannot touch the dog, and they cannot ask you to remove any part of the dog. And all you're doing, hanging on to the leash at the long end of the leash, so they have a clear view of all aspects of the dog. And then once they give their viewing, they said, okay, you call the dog, and he comes up. You hook the leash back up to a short leash, and away you go. You're off and running.
So you think that that's more of it in terms of training the security staff?
Yes, it is. It is training the officials at the borders.
Mm.
And that's what that is. And that's what Carlos Cotra had mentioned after the break, that my suggestion in question went directly to the CATSA.
Oh, nice.
And it was immediately responded back and indicating that Mr. Bill Brown, who runs CATSA,
mm-hmm.
will be looking into these matters and take my suggestions and points of interest and put them into action.
Oh, wow.
And that's exactly what was stated at the FAC.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah.
Oh, great.
So I kind of took a pink, and my guide at that session, she's a really good friend of mine. Her and her husband are a good friend of mine. And she punched me in the shoulder saying, way to go, you're the only one that got an answer.
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely seeing some immediate change there.
Yes.
So congratulations on that. We're going to head into another break here. DP, was there anything else you wanted to?
That's pretty good.
Okay, so with that, we're going to head into another break. This is Blank Canvas by the artist Critical Unity. A little bit about them. They are an alt-rock garage piano sibling duo from Vancouver. This is from their fresh new album. It came out January 16th. This is super new. Yeah, enjoy. Hello, you are back with All Access Pass, or the UBC show on accessibility. Now we're going to end off here with our guest, Bill Conway, who has come all the way from the Sunshine Coast. DP, do you want to take it away?
Yep. So you and the chief live on the Sunshine Coast, and you were just featured in the Coast newspaper about Seashell Library's new Braille audiobook cataloging system. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure can. About 2.5 years ago, I started to get books from my local library, the audio books, to play on my Plex Top or Daisy reading machine. And I used to get a whole bunch, and then I never knew which book I had on the shelf to read. And so that time I talked to the librarian and suggested about getting the books labeled in Braille, the title and the authors. And 2.5 years later, we found the right people, Jones Billsberger and Shona, her helper, created Canadian Brand Braille Services. Mm. And they're both teachers at Vancouver Community College, King Edward Campus. And they did come over and did all the Braille, 1,000-plus books in Braille for Braille labeling. Mm. And it makes it easier for a person like myself who reads Braille to, when they get a whole bunch of books, what book they're reading next or which book they want to read next. And I also can walk into the library now and pick up my own book, which couldn't happen before.
Right.
Okay. So that's the big difference there.
Right. Have you been using it a lot since December?
I read about 3 books a week.
Wow.
So currently you are bringing in some much needed awareness on accessibility, specifically for those that are visually impaired. Can you tell us what you are currently working on?
As chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee for the District of Seashell, I not only look at accessibility for people with visual or sensory disabilities, but also for a mother who's pushing a stroller. We want to try and make sure sidewalks have proper lifts, mm-hmm. cutout mm-hmm. lifts that go down and off the sidewalk, actually even templated ones so we, the visually impaired, can tell where the bumps are and with what direction we may be facing also. We also like them here, at least in Seashell, we have yellow ones, so they're illuminated at night. In the city of New York City, for example, they have blue ones. In Morristown, New Jersey, where the chief and I were trained, they have red cutouts. So depending upon what community you go to, you can have a variety of colors. And they're all built in the same way. There's even a community called Chester, New Jersey, where every single driveway even and every single cutout corner are cemented bubbles or taps on them.
Wow.
So that we all know where they all are. I was quite surprised when I walked Chester, New Jersey. I said, where's this car coming from? Is the driveways in and out of the major parking lots.
Oh. Yeah. Miriam is currently on the side here watching, but she has commented that Vancouver needs to catch up.
They need more than ketchup, and it's not the Heinz variety size style flavor.
So you were actually telling me, I thought this was quite funny, and I hope you can share this on the air too, is you do something with the council members in your city as well as the mayor?
Every once in a while, I'll do what you call a blind man's walk, where I try to introduce new councilors and staff, city staff, to my community. We will blindfold the mayor, actually put a blindfold on him, and give simulated visual glasses to a variety of councilors. And yes, I will provide them all with a white cane, and I will provide them all with a proper guide, and not me either. I'm not the guide. And we will take them through a route within my district. And one time we pointed out, they just put in some 4-way stop signs, and when I found them, they were at my nose level, and I stand 6'1", so you can imagine how low the stop sign was. And so we made sure that the councilors, not the mayor, the counselors were fully aware of that height because I had my guides walk them into it. And within 48 hours of the blind man's walk, those stop signs were raised. So that's being creative, instigating a situation by making sure that a blind person didn't walk into it. And my guides made sure that they did. You know, of course, they never got hurt. You know, there to protect them. But they made sure that they're fully aware of that stop sign and how low it was to their face and what it may feel like if you ever get cut by one of those metal stop signs. And yes, you will stop. That's for sure. But the idea is not to have them stop at your nose.
Awesome. So that's kind of wrapping up of our episode. We're running out of time here. Thank you so much for coming in, all the way from the Sunshine Coast as well as Chief. Thank you to both of you for coming in and I think raising a lot of awareness to our listeners on guide and service dogs, specifically guide dogs. So thank you so much for coming in.
I want to say thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to do this. And I'm not, on behalf of the Chief and I, we say, ruff, ruff.
So thank you to everyone who is listening. Thank you to the collective and my two members that joined me in studio today, DP and Miriam. We encourage you all to listen to our show online, just in case you missed a bit of it. We are on CITR.ca. Just look up All Access Pass. We have all of our episodes podcasted. Don't forget